From The Conversation, this is Politics with Michelle Grattan, a podcast where we hear from politicians and experts on the issues of the day.
Here we are at last in election year, although it does seem that the campaign has been going on for months and months and months. We know the poll will be in May. Next week, the parliament will resume, albeit briefly, and there'll be a budget on April 2. This week, we've had the report of the Royal Commission into the financial sector, with its indictment of the behaviour by banks and other institutions. We begin this year's politics podcast with the Deputy Prime Minister and Nationals leader, Michael McCormack, to talk about the banks and many other issues. Michael McCormack, the Nationals, or at least some of your backbenchers, were instrumental in the government finally agreeing to the Banking Royal Commission. Do you regret that it didn't get to appointing that commission sooner?
No, well, look, I don't have any regrets, but I do commend Lou O'Brien, the member for Wide Bay, and George Christensen, the member for Dawson, and certainly Senator John Wacker-Williams for the role that they played in getting a Royal Commission up. But the fact is, we extended the Royal Commission's terms of reference, I suppose, because originally it was just going to be into the banks. We extended that to include superannuation, and I think what we've got is a lot better outcome and the blowtorch on where Commissioner Hain believed it should have been applied, and indeed the public think it should have been applied. So I think what we've got is a far better outcome.
How much feeling is there against the banks in regional areas? Because quite a few of the victims were from the country.
Look, and I've sat through many mediations with banks and with people who are going to have their gates locked and the keys taken away and, their whole livelihoods ripped from under them. And they are very, very troubling meetings, let me tell you. I'm really pleased that there's going to be major changes to the way that banks deal with distressed agricultural loans. And I think the new National Farm Debt Mediation Scheme is not only necessary but overdue. Yes, there is a feeling in the bush that the banks have betrayed them by shutting up shop and centralising services. The fact is, a lot of people, when they go into a bank, they want to have the same manager that they had when they were last there, whether it was a month ago or 6 months ago. And when there's a revolving door of young people, it doesn't inspire confidence in an old cocky who goes in there with his wife and they want to extend a loan because they want to buy the block next door or something like that. And, they're told no because their credit's not good enough and, they're sitting on a multi-million dollar property. Now, a requirement, thanks to the Royal Commission, that banks don't charge default interest on ag loans is good where a drought or a natural disaster has occurred, because we all know that, those happen often. And the valuation of ag land will need to be independently determined for the lending process. And all those things are good. And banks are going to be required to ensure that distressed farm loans are managed by people experienced in agriculture. And, I think that's really important. I mentioned the young people. Nothing wrong with young people. I don't have a problem with young people rising stars in the financial sector. But, if people experienced in agriculture, and receivers can only be appointed as a remedy of last resort, they're good measures.
Let's turn to some wider questions. The Coalition is opening the year still in poor shape in the polls, and the Nationals, of course, had Andrew Broad forced to say he won't recontest because of a personal scandal that was late last year. Mm. Also, the year ended with criticism of your leadership from within your own ranks, and you appear at risk in the coming election of losing the seat of Cowper to former independent Rob Oakeshott.
Well, I'm not going to write Cowper off yet, and I know that within my own party I have solid support. So Pat Conaghan is doing an outstanding job in Cowper and making sure that the people of Port Macquarie and Coffs Harbour know that he's the one, and everywhere in between, quite frankly. So I don't accept that. I don't think people in Cowper have forgotten exactly what Rob Oakeshott was like during that 43rd Parliament. But the polls certainly are one thing, but I don't ever look at polls. I've got to tell you, and if you don't like one poll, well, wait a fortnight, there'll be another one which might be a little bit better. And, if you take polls for for absolute truth, then we wouldn't have Stephen Marshall's Liberals governing South Australia. Will Hodgman wouldn't have been re-elected Premier in Tasmania. Brexit wouldn't have probably occurred. Donald Trump wouldn't be President of the United States, and John Alexander certainly wouldn't have won the seat of Bennelong, because the polls were all against. Every one of those cases I mentioned were against what actually transpired on ballot day.
Well, I think at the last election, the Nats had a look at the polls and they saw that if they didn't differentiate themselves from the Liberals, they might be in a lot of trouble. Your electoral strategy then, your party's electoral strategy, was to chart your own course, to be different from the Liberals. Will you apply that same strategy this time?
Well, we probably differentiate from the Liberals in the fact that we are there for rural and regional Australia, but in the national interest. But the fact is, election campaigns are always, they're electorate by electorate. Quite frankly, they're city by city, town by town, suburb by suburb, district by district. And that's how the Nationals fight our campaigns. I mean, I will fight and campaign in the Riverina way differently, I suspect, than perhaps some of my colleagues, my LNP colleagues, will in North and Central Queensland, the likes of Michelle Landry and Ken O'Dowd and George Christensen. We have similar messages, but they're different local issues. And I've got to tell you, Michelle, as you would know, you've been around long enough, that all politics is local. So what might be playing out, particularly in a seat like Page, Kevin Hogan, the sorts of things that he campaigns on and fights hard for are way different than some of the things that others. Because they're different local issues and different local people. They're still rural and regional people. They still expect education and health services and everything else to be on a par with city services. But the fact is, they are different communities. And, you have to be in touch with your local electorates. And that's why I'm proud to lead a team where my people get out on the ground every weekend when in a non-sitting week. And I know they've been very, very busy and working hard over the summer months to show to people, as they always do. It's not just because we're in a campaign year or an election year. They're always out there. They turn up. They deliver.
Well, of course, in the core of your electorate, in the state seat of Wagga, we recently saw an independent have a dramatic win.
Look, certainly we did, but the fact is, the Liberal candidate, Julia Hamm, was not from Wagga Wagga. She still topped the poll, and it was preferences went against the candidate there. But she wasn't well known, and Joe McGurr, who won the seat, had run against Daryl Maguire, the sitting member, in 2011, and there was backlash against the fact that Daryl had been mentioned in ICAC. And that, of course, went against the party that had held Wagga Wagga since 1957, that being the Liberal Party. And the fact that the Nationals didn't run a candidate because of a deal arranged between the Premier and Deputy Premier, more's the pity, because I think had we run a candidate, the Coalition may well have retained the seat. And I know that the Nationals are running this time and the Liberals aren't. And we've got an outstanding candidate in McKenna Powell, who understands ag, understands business and family and all the rest. And she's been working hard ever since she was pre-selected, even before that, and I've got every faith that she will give it her best shot and hopefully win the seat.
Now, at the start of this parliament, the Nationals had two New South Wales senators. Fiona Nash was knocked out in the citizenship affair, and Waka Williams is retiring at this election. Your candidate is in third place on the New South Wales coalition ticket, which means that she will be struggling. And it's going to look pretty bad for the Nats, isn't it, if you end up with no New South Wales senator in the next parliament?
Well, it won't be a good outcome for rural and regional Australia, and that's why, and certainly rural and regional New South Wales, and that's why I always encourage people to make sure when they are voting to really carefully consider what they're doing in the upper house, and whether that's a state election with the Legislative Council or indeed the federal sphere with the Senate, you often find that people they'll vote for the person they know and the person who turns up to their little flower show or their agriculture show, whatever the case might be, the footy, because they know them and they respect them and they like them. And then they think, oh, I'll send the governor a message in the upper house. Well, people need to really look closely at how they do it and what they do and where they put their one, because the fact is, we've seen just how obstructionist the Senate can be. And, you know, when you've got a government, and a good government, we've been a good government, we are a good government, finding it very, very difficult to get things through the Senate because of an obstructionist Senate, I think people should be very careful as to where they place that Senate vote. Yes, you know, Wacker and Fiona are going to be difficult to replace. Wacker's retiring, of course. Perrin Davey is an outstanding candidate for us from Deniliquin, understands irrigation, but not just that, for all of southern New South Wales, indeed all of the state, I really hope, because she gets in because she will travel the length and breadth of New South Wales making sure that rural and regional voices are heard.
Wouldn't you be better off running your own ticket?
Well, we've got four candidates, and that's yet to be decided as to whether we will run our own separate ticket. You know, and we may well do that. That'll be decided by Central Council, but we've pre-selected four candidates, and we'll see what happens there.
When will that decision be made?
Very soon.
Now, just on a specific issue, we've seen intense heat this summer. Indeed, I was out in your area of Wagga and it was very, very hot. We've had terrible bushfires. This has once again focused attention on climate change. Do you find that people in the bush are more aware of climate change these days? And what are they telling you that the politicians, the government, should be doing about it?
Well, I tell you what they're not telling us to do, and that is put a carbon tax in and put emission targets in that are going to de-industrialise the nation and send jobs to the wall. That's what they're telling me they don't want. But yes, you will get some people who, of course, go down the Greens agenda. I mean, they're in every town. I understand that, but, you know, and there's many differing opinions. But the fact is, we are doing everything that we can without actually closing down farms, without stopping agriculture, and without stopping manufacturing and the like, and making sure that what we do is keeping a close eye also on power bills. What we don't want to do is put policies in place that is not going to reduce the world's emissions or world's temperature by one iota, and yet charge people, and particularly people who can't afford it, way too much for their power bills. And when I say way too much, those people who can't afford it, the likes of retirees, people who you know, are struggling to meet the cost of living, we don't want to whack them unnecessarily. So what we want to do is have sensible climate policies. That's what we've got. We're meeting our emissions targets that were set. We're more than meeting those. What we do need, of course, to do is always give the planet the benefit of the doubt. We're doing that. We're investing in soils. We're making sure that, you know, we do all those sorts of things. And I have to say, we're also investing $500 million in more dams, more water infrastructure, because when it rains, and it will rain, people will curse the amount of rain we're going to get in the future. You know, we want to store that water for times of drought. So, you know, we've seen hot temperatures before. We've seen droughts before. We've experienced floods before. Goodness knows, look at what's happening in Townsville at the moment. And we just need to better equip ourselves for the future. And that's why we've also put in place a $3.9 billion future drought fund.
And do you think there'll be more money for the direct action emission fund?
Well, I think there'll be more money for climate action in general. And we need to make sure that we do that. But what we don't want to do is place all the emphasis on something which is not going to reduce the global temperature, and certainly not Australia's temperature, by as much as 0.1 of a degree. You know, what we want to make sure is that there are jobs for the future, that there are renewables, that they have a future. And, you know, you look around the countryside and there's big solar projects going in, and the government's backing those. What we're wanting to do is make sure that there are jobs in the renewable sector, that there are jobs in country New South Wales, country Australia generally, and making sure that we don't de-industrialise Australia for the sake of nothing.
The government at the moment is looking at potential projects for so-called firm power, base power, to underwrite. Will those include coal, the ones selected?
Well, look, what we've got with our policies, with our very sensible and reasoned and measured policies, is investment opportunities for all types of energy sources. And coal has a future in this nation. It does. And, you know, I'd like to see Richard Di Natale or anybody else who thinks that, you know, coal should be to go and face those miners in North Queensland, Central Queensland, those high-vis vest workers, but not only those people who actually have jobs in white-collar jobs in the sorts of mining companies who do a very, very good job. They've been demonised by the Greens and others for the job that they do. And the fact is, with the technology available today, the HELE technology available today, you can utilise coal in a very friendly to the environment type of way to make sure that we continue to get the reliability in the system. And let's face it, you know, 60% of our energy needs are still being met by coal. And, you know, until I can be shown otherwise, the fact that the renewables can supply the total needs of our energy for our manufacturing, for our farms, for our irrigators, and indeed for our small businesses and families, until I can be shown that, you know, that can be so reliable and so affordable, then, you know, coal's going to have a big part to say in the future.
Now, you were mentioning water. The South Australian Royal Commission into the Murray-Darling has been scathing about legal breaches and bad administration. What's your take on the findings, and what should be the federal government's response?
Well, if they can find that illegal activity has in fact taken place, well, you know, those sorts of things should go to the police. The fact is, our irrigators and our cotton growers in particular, and rice growers too, have been absolutely maligned by people saying that you know, they shouldn't be doing what they're doing. They've taken too much water out of the river in recent months and years. Well, the fact is, they haven't had an allocation for 3 years in many parts. So I'm not quite sure how that equates to fair and reasonable arguments. The fact is, we need to grow food and fibre. We do it for exports. We do it for domestic supplies. And we do a damn fine job. Our farmers are the world's best environmentalists. And unlike the environment, they have to account for every single drop of water that they pay for. Not that they just use, but they pay for. And they pay for some besides. Fact is, too, you can look at any number of historic photos and you will find the Darling and the Murray and other rivers besides. You know, there were times before the rivers were regulated as they are now when they quite frankly dried up, where you could just walk straight across them. And there are many, many photos of that, you know, in past droughts that show just that. And now that the rivers are regulated, yes, it's you know, under the Murray-Darling Basin Plan, which I might add is a bipartisan plan, and which I might add, you know, has seen that the measures put in place have helped the flow to the environment in a way that would not have been possible before. The fact is, the Murray-Darling Basin Plan is largely an ecological environmental document, always was. And apart from the 450 gigalitres of water signed away by Julia Gillard and back at Coolwar in December 2012, that was the only portion of water which actually had a triple bottom line approach. So they take that water out, provided there's social and economic implications balanced with the environment implications. But apart from that, it is largely an environmental document. And so the farmers make do with the water they get. They pay dearly for it. But the fact is, to point the finger during a time of an extended drought and say that the farmers are not doing what they should be doing, well, I think it's a far cry from what these people should be saying.
So,
and it's a far cry from the truth.
So how will the government respond? How should the government respond to this report?
Well, the Agriculture Minister, David Littleproud, has tasked Rob Vertusi, who is an expert in this field. He's getting together a panel of experts to look at the recent Menindi situation, the fish kill there, and what else has happened besides. They'll report back to the government in March. I've got every faith that process will be done in the right and reasonable way. And of course, it's going to be independent of any political interference. The fact is, what the Royal Commission from South Australia, which was established by Ian Hunter, we all remember Ian Hunter, how he abused Lisa Neville, his Labor colleague, the Victorian Water Minister, at that famous stoush at the restaurant, before telling the acting Prime Minister Barnaby Joyce where he could, the fact that he could go forth and multiply as well. I mean, this is a Royal Commission set up by South Australia to get an outcome for South Australia. It was state-based and state-biased, and I don't mind saying that. The fact is, what we want to do on a national level is be way more balanced and take into account states, take into account communities, and take into account environment as well as the farmers. We don't want to play favourites with this, and we want to make sure that we get the best outcome.
The government will be already looking to the April 2 budget, which will be an election one. There's been speculation about some dollops of money for older people, but what about rural and regional voters? Will they be winners in this budget? Are you fighting to get some specifics?
Well, they'll always be winners while the Nationals are in government with the Liberals. They will, rural and regional people will always be winners. And of course, the
I think they want something more specific.
Well, I'm not going to preempt any pre-budget discussions. I certainly wouldn't do that. That's cabinet in confidence. But I know that Josh Frydenberg is determined to have the budget in surplus. That's a word foreign to Labor. Hasn't happened under them since, I think, about 1989. The fact is, we will produce a surplus budget. Fact is, it will be a good one. And the fact is, it will be good for particularly rural and regional Australia, because the Nationals, led by myself, and with fine representation throughout Australia, we'll make sure that we get our fair share, in fact, more than our fair share for the electorates that we represent and those that are in regional Australia besides.
That's a promise?
Absolutely.
The government next week, when Parliament meets, could face a defeat in the House on the legislation about medical evacuations from Manus and Nauru. This is not a confidence vote, but do you think that if you do lose
this vote,
it will be seen that way?
Well, the fact is, Labor lost, I think it was 64 votes on the floor.
Not big ones, though.
Well, there were some big ones, as I recall, and between 2010 and 2013. So, you know, there's obviously been a new paradigm set by the media that if we lose one, then, you know, the sky's going to fall in. Well, the fact is, what we want to do is be strong on our borders. And what we want to make sure is that, you know, Australia's security, Australia's national security and Australia's border protection is what it ought to be. And so that's why we've got the policy we have in place. If others think that it should be altered in, in this parliament, I suppose you could almost argue, hung parliament that we have now, where some people are looking to make big names for themselves all in a hurry to perhaps secure their seats or to perhaps win another seat that they weren't sitting in previously. Well, let's see what they will bring on, and let's just hope that it's not going to weaken our borders.
So would you say it's better for the government to hang tough on this matter and just take a defeat if it comes, rather than make unending concessions or further concessions?
Well, what I don't want to see is our borders weakened in any way. And so what I want to make sure is that whatever policy we take, whether that's to the parliament or whether it's to the people or whether it's both, that it's going to make sure that the boats don't start arriving again. Because rest assured, if Bill Shorten ever becomes Prime Minister, you will see almost akin to the scene in Troy where the boats will just resume and they will be in numbers. And, Australia's tight borders, which we've had now since 2013, will once again be placed at risk.
So you're not fussed about a possible defeat, in other words?
Well, the fact is, the policy that we're taking to the parliament is the right one, policy that that Labor and perhaps some of the crossbenchers, if they want to weaken border protection, well, they've got the opportunity to put that to the parliament. We'll see what happens.
If the government is defeated in May, would the Nationals stay in coalition with the Liberals, or might they go it alone?
Michelle, that's a very big hypothetical, and I really don't want to even contemplate it because, well, it's an interesting question. I don't even want to contemplate that, and I don't want to contemplate it not because of the Nationals, not because I want to retain my job or retain my seat, but what we're there is for is the people we represent. And I don't want rural and regional Australia to start losing out on the Building Better Regions Fund, on the Regional Growth Fund, on the mobile phone towers, which Bridget McKenzie and Fiona Nash have seen, more than 860 phone towers either installed or indeed funded. I don't want to see those sorts of things go. And rest assured, if you get a shortened plebiscite Bowen government, that's what you're going to get, and rural and regional people are going to miss out. So I'm not even thinking beyond May at this stage. I'm thinking that we need to get out and sell and tell our message. It's a good one. Yes, there were some unfortunate things that happened last year, which we would have best done without. But the fact is, we've been a good government. We've helped small business create jobs. We've lowered the small business tax rate to the lowest it's been in 79 years. We've extended the instant asset write-off in recent weeks to $25,000. If you want a job, you'll get a job. If you want to have a go in this country, we'll back you all the way. You know, there's been some really good things that we've done, and I'd like to think that Australia will repay their faith in us with their vote to ensure that that success and that good government policy continues.
Now, Michael McCormack, we can't let you go without referencing your stellar performance, I can only describe it as, at the Parkes Elvis Festival over the summer break. You're obviously a long-term Elvis fan. Does this stretch right back to your youth?
Well, my late mother, Eileen, loved Elvis. She played both him and Kamal, would you believe, all the time on a cassette tapes. And whenever you got home from school, it was either the King of Rock and Roll or, dare I say, our good friend from Sri Lanka, who was so long as the case was then, playing away on mum's cassette player. Yes, Elvis has revived every January in Parkes in central western New South Wales. The festival's been going for 27 years. Pumps $13 million into that economy, that drought-stricken economy now. And wearing a powdered blue Elvis costume with sequins on it and singing Suspicious Minds and a few other tracks is going to bring a bit of joy or mirth and merriment to locals. Well, so be it. It was a great festival. It was a great weekend. I have to say, it is a bit disconcerting when you stand up on the stage, when you're called on the stage to sing, and you look out, there's 10,000 faces out there. It's, I can imagine what a buzz it is for real performers. And let me tell you, they didn't go away. They didn't go away, but I certainly didn't perform as well as some of the other Elvis impersonators on the weekend.
Well, thank you.
It was a lot of fun.
Well, thank you for talking with us today, and we'll take this podcast out with your rendition of Elvis. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
How I wish that there were more than 24 hours in the day. Because even if there were 40 more, I wouldn't sleep a minute away. Oh, there's blackjack and poker and roulette wheel, a fortune won and lost on every deal. All you need's a strong heart and a nerve of steel. Viva Las Parks!
That's all I'm getting on this.
Viva Las Parks! Viva Las Vegas!
I just don't want to cut him off.
That audio was from Weekend Today. Thank you to Channel 9 for permission to use it.
Our theme music is by Lee Rosevere. You can find more podcasts from The Conversation on our website at theconversation.com.